And welcome back here to Radio Free Erin, where it is almost 2 o'clock here in New York City on Independence Day. And how is the Americans celebrating Independence Day over in Dublin? Well, we have an American informer who's been sitting in a Dublin court, a special criminal court, where they have three Whig judges, and you refer to them as yes, my lord, no, my lord. And he goes by the name of David Rupert, who was in the employ of the FBI in this country and British military intelligence over in Ireland, where he's testifying against Michael McKevitt, who's being charged with directing terrorism, which carries a life sentence. David Rupert, who was a member of the Irish Freedom Committee here in America, but was thrown out a couple of years ago for some of his shenanigans. If you want to get more on the case, you go to McKevittTrial.com, McKevittTrial.com. All the latest updates, sound clips, some of our own Brian Moore's cartoons that he did about David Rupert are on there. And it's a very good site if you want to get the latest. And actually, the interviews we do here at WBAI are put up on that. Last week's interview are up there. And also, I'd like to thank Robert Knight and Sharan Harper for letting me on Wake Up Call there the other morning on Tuesday to talk about the case with Chris Fogarty from Chicago, who flew back today, and he's actually in the air. Now, if you remember last week, David Rupert had linked Michael McKevitt to everybody in the world except Osama bin Laden. And we stated that last week, you know, how Mickey McKevitt was linked to everyone. And I said, oh, my God, the only person I missed was Osama bin Laden. Well, I was wrong. This is from the Sunday Business Post that came out last Sunday. A little over 3 years ago, Supergrass David Rupert sent an email to his FBI handlers after being inspired by a television program about Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. The American and the Brits, he suggested, in typical gung-ho style, should try to set up a meeting between bin Laden and the target of Rupert's spying, the alleged real IRA leader Michael McKevitt. The spy agencies demurred because of the obvious difficulties in persuading a Muslim fundamentalist in Afghanistan to meet with a Christian Republican in Ireland whom he had never heard of before. So these are some of the stories that are coming up. And as I said last week, this wouldn't get a play on Comedy Central or even the Sci-Fi Channel. And with us on the line is Martin Galvin. He's a lawyer up in the Bronx, been involved with the Republican movement most of his life. And his name was mentioned during the trial last week, as was mine. And Martin's been helping out with the case. And he's going to give us an update on what happened this week. Martin, I'm sorry, we only have about 20 minutes for the update because so much went on during the week. It is unbelievable.
Well, John, that'll give us about 1 minute per each crucial thing that's happened. This is part drama, part farce. I will say that one of the most dramatic developments, and it is a blow for American independence, came in a federal district court in Chicago. There, David Rupert, it was revealed at the outset of the trial, had given emails, documents, taped interviews to journalists, including Abdon Palish, Robert Hergeth, and some others for the Chicago Sun-Times, for them to do David's life story. I mean, it's not enough to get paid all those millions by the FBI and the British government. You want to have a movie about yourself, and David was going to get 55%. Now, those interviews could be crucial, because if Rupert was coming up with ideas like setting up the real IRA with Osama bin Laden or other things like that that would contradict what he's now saying at the time that he got together that courtroom story, you know, in that preparation leading up to his testimony, that is now going to be revealed to the defense, or at least a redacted version of it is now going to be given to the defense. They, in a Chicago federal court, asked for an order commanding and directing that those materials be provided. The journalists themselves and the FBI opposed it. A federal district judge said no. Michael McKevitt's right to a fair trial would override the privilege of the journalists, and he directed that they be handed over. And we now have FBI members coming back to the United States from Ireland so they can review and redact those materials, but they will be handed, at least in some form, over to a defense prosecution defense team for their continued examination of David Rupert. The continued testimony won't take place now till the middle of the week until they get a chance to go over that. A second major development is the potential of a London courtroom. Rupert testified that he had never committed any crimes. You know, he's an innocent guy. In fact, he said that the only thing he may have ever smuggled in his life was some firecrackers over the Canadian border that his father had placed there when he was a boy. It turns out that when Rupert was filling out an application for MI5, the British Secret Service, he admitted that he had been involved as a smuggler and had committed crimes in that basis. So the defense team, again, demanded that this individual be produced as a witness, because if Rupert lied in an Irish court about being involved in crimes, including specifically smuggling, and had told a British Secret Service member who was going to pay him that he had been involved in smuggling, then that would be crucial. That would show that he either committed perjury here or was lying to the British. Now, originally the prosecution said that this individual should not be a witness. They've now offered to have the member of British Secret Service testify behind a screen in Dublin or in a British trial. So going from Green Street Courthouse, the courthouse where Robert Emmett was condemned and gave his speech from the dock, where Donovan Rosser, many of the Fenians, so many Irish Republicans had given their speeches from the dock, and where Michael McKevitt now sits in that same courtroom, that may be moved to England or it may be done behind a screen in a Dublin courtroom where you can't see the witness. But there is going to be, the court has now allowed the defense to interview this person and potentially to call him as a witness. Those were two of the more dramatic developments. The testimony itself is just unbelievable. One of the things that came out is that because of Rupert, it's been came out in the past that Rupert owed $700,000 or more in taxes and didn't pay his federal taxes. It came out that MI5 and the FBI was paying him in cash so that he could hide that money from the Internal Revenue Service. So at the time when Rupert was a tax cheat, and was avoiding possible prosecution for federal tax cheat, being a federal tax cheat, our government and the British government were paying him in cash so that he could avoid paying taxes on these monies, having the federal government exercise its lien to file to obtain those monies to pay his tax debt. There was testimony that back in the 70s, Rupert informed on a state trooper. This state trooper happened to be his brother's girlfriend, although I shouldn't say that. When Rupert was asked, was this young lady the girlfriend of his brother, Dale, Rupert said, I don't know if she was a girlfriend. I know he was sleeping with her. Rupert got information or observed that this state trooper had been smoking marijuana with Dale Rupert, Dave Rupert's brother, and presumably with David Rupert, gave information when he was in under legal difficulty, financial difficulty, potential criminal charges in the early 70s, destroyed this young woman's life. In fact, when the defense asked, what do you think about, what was the effect that it had on her life, Rupert said, I don't know, I don't care. Some of the other things that came out, Rupert said he got involved in spying for the government at that time in the early 70s, because his wife was a, quote, bitch, I hope I can say that on WBAI, and that he wanted to get out of the house. He talked about another wife who became pregnant. He told her to get an abortion, and when she asked for financial as well as emotional help, he told her, no, you're on your own. A number of other things have come out in the trial.
Yeah, he sounds like a real stand-up guy.
Well, he's stand-up when it comes to stealing for himself. In his most recent bankruptcy, that in the early 90s, which actually he filed for before getting involved, sending a truck out with an inexperienced driver that killed a number of people, in which there was a $1 million suit afterwards. He filed for bankruptcy, and the basis of this, he was doing business with a firm, B&W Cottage. Rupert diverted or did a fraudulent wire transfer of $650,000 belonging to B&W Cottage. So when the agents, Buckley, first came to him to talk to him about spying in Ireland on people like Joe O'Neill and others that would eventually lead him, he says, to meeting with Michael McKevitt, he thought he was going to be prosecuted for a wire transfer. Another case that he had, one of his other bankruptcies, he said that he was only found to be a bankrupt because the judge was against him. He said that numerous times. The judge was jealous of him, was against him, was biased. Turns out the judge who was presiding in the proceeding wasn't even the judge there in that case. He had another crucial piece of testimony, or one of the large areas of testimony. A state trooper, who he referred to as Eddie, Hannon, I believe was the last name, or Heenan, wrote a memo to the FBI when they were first talking about recruiting Rupert. He said that this guy is a petty thief, a smuggler who's been involved in smuggling drugs, guns, and illegal aliens over the Canadian border, and said that the only reason Rupert had not been prosecuted or was not jailed was because he'd been adept at getting other people to take the fall for him, putting other people in the way. Now, Rupert said that this guy was Hamill was his name, Eddie Hamill, that Eddie Hamill was a good friend of his, and that he knew him very well, that he knew Hamill well, Hamill knew him well. When he was read this memo saying, calling him a petty thief and a smuggler of guns and drugs and illegal aliens, Rupert said that Hamill was jealous of him because they had both taken flying lessons together and Rupert could solo and this guy could not. But again, that's a state trooper telling the FBI at the very outset that this guy was involved in smuggling and crimes. Rupert, of course, has said over and over again he's never been involved in any criminal activity. When they asked him what about tax fraud, he didn't know that was against the law. He thought that that was a civil matter. I guess living in Chicago, he never heard of Al Capone. That's the flavor of the testimony. Rupert's background is so bad that they haven't yet gotten into the direct testimony on the case or anything about his what he gave the testimony to in the initial trial. It's just gone through his background, one piece after another. He's emerged as somebody who will say whatever it takes to help himself, who will certainly say anything that will get him money. And essentially, that's what his testimony is here. Being, you know, paid to say whatever it takes to put Michael McKevitt away and being prepared whatever it takes to earn that money, however ridiculous it is.
Martin, yeah. I'm beginning to see a line develop in some of the Irish papers. Yes, it's true, all this stuff. Yeah, he's not a real nice guy. But really, does that have anything to do with his testimony against McKevitt? Well, and I'd be very worried that that would be the line adapted by the judges.
Well, two things have happened. And, of course, you are dealing in a special criminal court, which is referred to as a court of conviction. But there actually, during the past week, there seemed to be some sort of disagreement between the judges. At least some of them are paying attention to the evidence, although you could get a political verdict at the end of a political trial. Some of the things that are involved is the prosecution has said that the testimony of David Rupert depends, or the testimony in this trial depends on the character of David Rupert. There's no tapes. This guy was supposedly an FBI agent working with meetings after meetings with McKevitt, sitting in Army Council meetings, was totally trusted. But there's no tapes. There's nothing to corroborate anything he said. No matter if he's telling ridiculous tales, and some of the stuff is truly ridiculous, and you show that he's somebody who's willing to say whatever it takes, whatever will earn him the most amount of money, first from the FBI, then from the British government, and then from a book deal. If he's that type of person, his character may become so bad that even a special criminal court in Dublin can't accept it.
You're listening to Radio Free Erin, and we're discussing the case, which is now turned into of David Rupert, who our government has paid now close to $2 million, took care of his taxes, got him up in a nice house, probably somewhere out Midwest. And as Martin said, he hasn't been taped having these conversations with the people he says he's had them with, and he has linked Michael McKevitt, who's on trial for his life with directing terrorism. And here's another paragraph from the Sunday Business Post. McKevitt's name has been linked to just about every ogre in U.S. foreign policy. Rupert claimed last week that the veteran republic from County Louth was trying to set up deals with the Iraqi government, Libya's Colonel Gaddafi, the Sri Lankan Tamil Tiger guerrillas, and suicide bombers from the Middle East. The talk of two suicide bombers predated the emergence of what happened at the World Trade Center. So, I mean, every foreign policy that the Americans have, David Rupert has managed to link without any tapes, without any video, and he just says it in court, and it's supposed to be taken as gospel. And yet, you look at the background and everything that's coming out, Martin, on this guy, why should that be taken as gospel?
John, one of the things that was crucial, the allegation about the Tamil Tigers and some of the other foreign connections, Rupert said that this occurred when Michael McKevitt sent people to a conference at Geneva. The actual conference was a human rights conference. It's connected, actually, to the United Nations and to a number of non-governmental organizations involved with the United Nations, the basis of going there, and there were elected British officials there, there were elected officials from many other countries, a number of the people, Dave McSweeney, Rory Dugan, and Francie Mackey, people who have never been arrested for anything, traveled there quite openly, and they were actually hoping there was a, one of the groups there was the an American Indian group, which was going to host the conference the following year. They were hoping to get to bring pressure to bear to get an invite to an American conference and possibly break the ban on visa denial to the United States. Rupert just cast that and says, oh, this was something to get foreign international help by Michael McKevitt. It was absolutely, totally untrue. And when you get those types of untruths, those types of things which Joe O'Neill was talking about last week, you know, the laughable things that Rupert claimed that Joe O'Neill would have to send to Dave Rupert in the Drow's Bar for beer kegs, for example, or these hand signs that no one has ever heard of for explosives. You tie that with a person of this type of background who, about whom you could believe, you know, one of the things that was a Daily News article during the week, I gave them a quote that they didn't use, that this guy, David Rupert, is to truth on the witness stand what Baghdad Bob was to truth in press conferences. This guy is a liar. He's prepared to do whatever it takes to get himself out of trouble and to put money in his pocket. And it may get, this case eventually will go to Europe if Michael McKevitt is convicted. It may get to the point where even a Dublin court without a jury, you know, as Mary Kelly had a jury, otherwise she might have been convicted also. Thankfully, she had a jury trial. But it may get to the point with this court where things, as Cody McCone said, don't pass the smell test to the degree where even a Diplock court has to reject this David Rupert's testimony.
Martin, I find it very interesting that the FBI, for the next 3 years, forget about the $1 million in the past, they're going to pay him over $100,000 a year for the next 3 years, which certainly gives him an incentive to do whatever the FBI wants him to do.
Well, that plus the book sales. If, you know, if his trial goes down, his testimony is just dismissed, how much is he going to get from a book sale? I'm sure he views this as something he can get movie rights. I mean, this guy is somebody who, and not only that, what if the FBI starts to prosecute him for those crimes that they know about in the past? What if they go back against him for that? He also is getting money from the British Secret Service, and we don't know how long that's going to continue. All of this gives him a strong motivation to tell whatever lies it takes to make the FBI, to make the British Secret Service happy. And he certainly is somebody who's very willing to tell such lies if there's a buck in it for him or if there's safety from prosecution.
Well, Martin, you know, we don't want to leave out some of the other world figures that came up in this court trial. Manuel Noriega came up. The head of Chile came up. And top mob guys here in New York. I mean, this guy, Rupert, I don't know if it's going to be which section the book will be in, fiction or nonfiction, but he seems to never get arrested. He said he was setting up money laundering through Panama with Manuel Noriega. He was going to run a casino off the coast of Florida. And he never gets arrested. So it's quite obvious somebody high up in the FBI has protecting him. But the most amazing thing, and this is also from the Sunday Business Post, and I believe this will be coming out in the case next week, his brother Dale had been arrested some months earlier with more than a ton of cannabis. Dale was jailed, now this is in the state of Florida, for 2 years after naming two of his associates to the FBI. It is suspected that one of them was his own brother David. Now, anybody knows anything about Jeb Bush's estate down there in Florida, you get caught with a ton of marijuana, you have three or four generations of your family are going to do life there. You might not see a relation for about four generations. Dale Rupert got 2 years for a ton. Now, yeah, what's cooking here, man? Come on.
Not only that, but the drugs were found on a on a truck. They were just Dale Rupert was in a in a motor lodge. The drugs were parked in the, you know, in a location very near the motor lodge. The FBI gets them. The FBI makes the arrest. And he said, you know, David Rupert owned a trucking company or was involved in a trucking company. The trucking company had to be, happened to be right in Florida, right where this is found. So it seems to be pretty clear that Dave Rupert, the guy who would, give evidence against his brother's girlfriend, her state trooper, to protect himself and get himself out of trouble, that David Rupert may be very much involved with this. Dale Rupert, who still lives in a trailer park, he certainly didn't have the resources to get a truck, to get the marijuana, to get all of that from Texas. The other Bush state, Florida. And, John, I should mention one more thing. The state, the prosecution, is now complaining about journalists who are now criticizing Rupert and may be depriving, the state of a fair trial. And it seems directed at the Sunday Business Post. So while there's some ways of trying to influence the blanket and Anthony McIntyre not to cover protests about Irish Republican political prisoners, the Free State seems to be making moves to try and intimidate journals, and it may very well be the Sunday Business Post for just printing things like those facts that you've just read to the audience.
You know, it's a great quote in one of the papers today. And if you go to NewsHound, NewsHound, you'll get the stories. Or go to mckevittrial.com, mckevittrial.com. One of the great quotes there, they said, this could influence the court. There's no jury. It's three judges who have the evidence already before them, and now they're afraid that stuff's appearing in the paper. They say, you know, this could jeopardize the case. Jeopardize it with who? The judges have all this evidence. The prosecution has all this evidence. All that's coming out is stuff that they have.
Not only that, but ever since Michael McKevitt was arrested, there's been one article after another about him, about Bernadette, accusing them of the Oma bombing, which he's not even accused of in a court of law. There's no allegation against them. There is one negative story, sensational story after another. The British-Irish Human Rights Watch had actually complained that it was impossible for him to get a fair trial in this case because of the pretrial publicity. The defense has argued that. They tried to make applications, and they were simply dismissed. Now, when Rupert's actually on the stand and the cross-examination is being publicized, the facts that WBAI was reporting on but almost alone for so long, and which are now coming out on the witness stand so that other papers like the Irish Independent or like the Sunday Business Post are reporting it, now they want to shut down any publicity because they say, oh, now it could influence the trial. When there's something negative against Michael McKevitt, that was fine. But when you're actually hearing the truth about David Rupert and what sort of witness he is and what sort of credibility problems he has, now they want to do away with outside the court publicity.
Well, it's good to see our tax dollars at work over there in Dublin. They were always talking about investment in Ireland. It looks like that's an investment now of a couple of million dollars in the form of 6'7", 300-pound David Rupert. He hasn't lost any weight since I met him at a meeting on 8th Avenue, and I guess he's living the good life.
He's got some new suits, Sean. He used to wear shorts, and everybody used to laugh about his legs, he certainly got some new clothes. They have a number of FBI agents who are seated in the courtroom every day. They had to fly back to go over the documents, which a federal district judge has ordered handed over to the defense. So there is quite an amount of a financial investment in this trial. And it's a shame that the United States has to go to this length to put this type of witness on the stand to give perjury in a foreign courtroom against an Irish Republican, the same courtroom, as I said before, where Robin Emmett stood, where so many Fenians have stood, and where now Michael McKevitt sits. John, can I say two more things just before we leave this?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Number one, the importance of observers. Cody McCone has been there. This week there has been somebody from the Lawyers Alliance, John McVeigh. I've been told by a number of people close to the defense that the presence of observers have had an amazing impact. As soon as they get there, the demeanor and the attitude of the judges seems to change. If there are people who are going over to Ireland this week or in the next 2 weeks, if they want to go to that courtroom, please call O'Dwyer and Bernstein, 212-571-7100. Your presence just to monitor this trial is crucial. And the other thing I wanted to say before leaving is get well wishes soon to Martin Lyons, one of the founding members of Irish Northern Aid, a great Irish Republican who's has undergone an operation this week for hip replacement. And I'm sure you won't mind if I say there's no truth to the rumor that he hurt himself last week falling out of his chair laughing at the testimony of David Rupert.
Yeah, we send the same thing here up to Martin. He's been a great Irish Republican probably all of his life. And Martin will be staying on top of this. And as I said before, go to Newshound, NUZHOUND.com. Or to McKevittTrial.com. That's McKevittTrial.com. And you get all the latest updates on this unbelievable case that's going on in Dublin on behalf of the American taxpayers. And Martin, we thank you for coming on. And we're going to dedicate this next song to our favorite FBI agent and informer, Dave Rupert.
What's up, man?
Hey, yo, what's up?
Yo, Snow, they came around looking for you the other day.
Word,
bust it.
Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go slam. I'll keep on bum bam. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, stab someone out of land. I'll keep on bum bam. Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go slam. I'll keep on bum bam. Take the man that said that I'm a stormy, stab somewhere down the lane. I'll keep bum bum down. He said I'm a little homie, now they blow down my door. Rain he could pour through my window. So they put me in the back of the car at the station. From that point on, I reached my destination. Where the destination region out of easy tension. Where the look down my pants, look up my bottom. So informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go glam. I'll keep bum bum down. Take the man that said that I'm a stormy, stab somewhere down the lane. I'll keep bum bum down. Farmer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go glam. I'll keep on bum down. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, stab somewhere down the lane. I'll keep on bum down. So, big all the man, they think they have more power. They're on the phone, Mr. Dead one, I want me for once, I use the once, and now me call me lover. Love who me calling on the one, tell me. I'm in love in my heart, down to my belly. Yes, and I'm a stormy, I be cool and deadly. It's the one MC Shine and the one that is slow. Together we all have a Mr. Tornado in power. You know, say that I'm a stormy, I go glam. I'll keep on bum down. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, stab somewhere down the lane. I'll keep on bum down. Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go glam. I'll keep on bum down. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, stab somewhere down the lane. I'll keep on bum down. So, listen for me, you better listen for me now. Listen for me, you better listen for me now. Women are rubber, the microphone, but the rock on stage. You say that I'm a stormy, I took a down. But I'm not getting an answer. I mean, say where you come from. People them say you come from Jamaica. But me born and raised in a bigger town. No one shall be know. People are people, man, is all a man know. Yeah, my shoes and them say rapping. And me toes, it's a show. When me a ball and other one Toronto. So it's farmer. You know, say that I'm a stormy, I go glam. I'll keep boom boom down. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, stab somewhere down the lane. I'll keep boom boom down. In farmer. You know, say that I'm a stormy, I go glam. I'll keep boom boom down. The man that says that I'm a stormy, stab somewhere down the lane. I'll keep on bum down. Come with a nice young lady, intelligent, yes, she jungle in Ari. Everywhere me go, me never left for a tally. You say that it's snowy, I'm the rum dance man. Rum is in a dance, I'll in a nation. You never know, say that I'm a stormy, I'm the boom shack. I tell me never lay a down flat, and now I'm can't go and bounce. You say that I'm a stormy, I'm gonna reach in at a drop. So informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go glam. I'll keep on bum down. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, stab somewhere down the lane. I'll keep on bum down. Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go glam. I'll keep on bum down. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, stab somewhere down the lane. I'll keep on bum down. Why worry? Why worry? In worry, in worry.
With my dibby dibby girl, police knock my door, lick up my pal, rough me up and I can't do a thing. Pick up my line when my telephone rings. Take me to the station, black up my hands, trail me down cause I'm hanging with the snowman. What I'm gonna do, I'm backed in a trap. Slap me in the face, took all of my gas. They have no clues and they wanna get warmer, but Sham won't turn informer.
Informer, you know that I'm a stormy, I go glam. I keep on going down. Take the man that said that I'm a stormy, stab somewhere down the lane. I keep on going down. Informer, you know that I'm a stormy, I go glam. I keep on going down. Take the man that said that I'm a stormy, stab somewhere down the lane. I keep on going down. Diddly dong, diddly diddly dong, them boy, ain't boy, ain't boy, ain't boy.
welcome back to Radio Free Aaron here in New York City. Anybody that's been a fan of this show knows we had a sort of world correspondent, and the likes of Mary Kelly, who, when she was in Palestine, ended up in Bethlehem in the cathedral there and stuck it out with the Palestinian people there. And Mary's been to New York, and she's been to Irish Republican functions here. But she is in the world news once again, because a couple of months ago, Mary Kelly took an axe to a U.S. military plane in Shannon Airport. And there was a verdict this week, and I'll read a little bit from the Irish Times. She had used the defense of lawful excuse, but the judge said there would be social anarchy if people took the law into their own hands. Kelly, I won't give her age, although it was in the New Irish Times, formerly of the peace camp in Shannon, was cheered by supporters as she walked from the Ennis Circuit Court after a jury failed to reach a decision, almost 5 hours of deliberation. Earlier, in his charge to the jury, Judge Moran said, if everyone acted like Kelly, there would be social chaos. If people are allowed to express their political views by damaging property, it would not be long before there would be mob rule and rioting in the streets. He said that on the night Kelly took law into her own hands, and if everyone pursued their political views with the best of motives and damaged property, there would be social anarchy. Judge Moran said there was a lot of politics in this case. However, he said the politics had nothing to do with the case and was irrelevant to the matter at hand. Judge Moran said at times it seems the U.S. government was on trial and not Mary Kelly. He said it was not the case of the U.S. government and Mary Kelly, or George Bush and Mary Kelly, or the Garter and Mary Kelly. It was the case of the people of Ireland and Mary Kelly. In his closing arguments, Mr. Brennan, Mary Kelly's lawyer defending, said, I suggest that the overwhelming moral responsibility in life is to protect life, and that is what Mary Kelly was trying to do on January 29th. Mr. Nick said, Kelly is a courageous and special person. I don't know if her actions saved one Iraqi child, but she tried out of respect for international law and to protect Iraqi life and property. Mary Kelly is not here because she had nothing to do, because she wanted to save life. However, the judge and prosecutor acknowledging that Mary Kelly is a lady of fortitude, but on January 29th, last, she went a step too far. She took the law into her own hands to deliberately damage a U.S. plane that cost $1.5 million to repair, and this is what the people of Ireland heard on their national broadcast that night.
The Circuit Court jury has failed to reach a verdict in a case in which the anti-war activist Mary Kelly was charged with damaging a U.S. naval aircraft at Shannon Airport. The United States claimed that $1.5 million worth of damage was done to the Boeing aircraft, which was refueling at Shannon 6 weeks before the outbreak of the Iraqi war.
Anti-war campaigners reacting with delight outside a courthouse in Kilrush this evening following the verdict in the four-day trial. Minutes earlier, the jury had said they couldn't agree on a verdict in the case in which 50-year-old Mary Kelly, a mother of four and an internationally known peace activist, was charged with damaging the U.S. aircraft. She had earlier told the court she had climbed over the perimeter fence and attacked the plane with an axe because she wanted to prevent a war in Iraq and save the lives of people there. She said she couldn't stand idly by and allow Shannon to be used to refuel U.S. war planes. Tonight's decision means that the Director of Public Prosecutions can take a fresh case against Mary Kelly, but her defense team say they will vigorously fight any such move.
We will fight that, and we will fight it in exactly the way that we did already, with the same vigor, and we will bring the same witnesses that we brought previously into this country, who are American experts, former U.S. Attorney General, former arms inspector, former sanctions person from the U.N. We will certainly fight this as vigorously the next time, if there is a next time.
Mary Kelly was convicted on a lesser charge of trespassing at Shannon Airport on January 29th. Judge Carol Moran deferred sentencing until October 23rd. Jim.
Welcome back to Radio Free Aaron, WBA 99.5 FM in New York. And we're very privileged to be joined both by Mary Kelly and by Ramsey Clark, who traveled all the way from New York to testify on her behalf. Mary, when I talked to you earlier, you said it was a great day for Ireland when their jury refused to convict you of damaging a U.S. warplane.
That's right, Sandy. Particularly so because the judge involved in the case, who seemed to be quite liberal as in the first days of the trial, he directed the jury to find me guilty. And he said these words about that there would be social anarchy if everybody behaved like I did. And the jury went out for 2 hours at first, and then they knocked on the door and came back down, and they had a question to ask him, and they wanted to see a copy of the law that I was supposed to have broken, but he wouldn't give it to them. And what he did was he read it out, that law, and he interpreted it again, and once again said that basically they had to find me guilty and to disregard my defense's evidence, including the international witnesses who came. And he sent them out again. So when they came back again 3 hours later and said that they couldn't reach a verdict, he was very upset. And it took quite a while for the penny to drop with me. I couldn't believe that at least three of them had disagreed. And it's a great victory. And that they were my words, that it's a great day for Ireland, that there are people who feel strongly enough and won't be directed by the very flawed law that we have in this country. And I was at a talk last night where, by the way, Scott Ritter was one of the witnesses that came to testify, and he's the ex-weapons inspector. He worked in Iraq for 7 years, and the judge would not allow his evidence to be heard. He only allowed one question to be asked of him, which my defense lawyer asked, was the invasion of Iraq illegal? And Mr. Ritter said, yes, it was illegal. And then the judge insisted that Mr. Ritter be dismissed, which was a great misfortune because he's one of the most powerful speakers I've ever heard.
And Mary, we also have Ramsey Clark with us on the line.
That's great. Ramsey gave evidence as well in the trial. Yeah, yeah. He was very, very powerful.
Ramsey, we're very pleased to have you with us.
Hi, Mary. Hi, Sandy.
Hello, Ramsey.
How are you?
Yeah.
I'm well, thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I hope you got back okay and recovering. You did a great job and helped to get a great result in this case.
Great cause and great victory for peace. Thank you.
Thank you.
You made it possible.
Yeah, Ramsey, we usually introduce you as the former Attorney General of the United States, but I think this is a case that shows that a lot of the work you've done as a human rights advocate and an advocate against militarism since you left office has in some ways been a lot more important. And the judge in this case said that at some times he thought the U.S. government was on trial, and I guess you had something to do with that.
Well, the U.S. government should have been on trial and ought to be on trial here. We've engaged in a war of aggression, which is the first crime under the Nuremberg Charter. It's a great crime against peace, and if you ignore that, you're going to have a lot of trouble. This this was resistance to a war of aggression. Mary acted to protect peace, to defend peace, to defend the honor of Ireland, for that matter, because Ireland was aiding and abetting in a war of aggression by permitting its airport facilities, its soil, to be used to attack Iraq and kill Iraqis. So it was a victory for humanity and for peace, and we have to keep the struggle going.
Ramsey, during the trial, they were talking about that particular plane was going to Sicily and not to Iraq, so it wasn't part of the war effort. And I don't know who brought up, who counted that, but was it you or was it Mary's lawyer? But it was a good counter movement about how it's all part of the system.
Yeah, I think everybody counted it, probably. I know I did. It was obviously an essential part of mounting the campaign to the final launching of the invasion. The war had been going on for a long time. We'd been bombing Iraq nearly every day this year before the actual invasion. So it was planes like this that were supporting it, and without planes like this, it couldn't have happened. Mary disarmed it. It wasn't an act of destruction. It was an act of disarmament. The plane's still there. It just couldn't fly.
Ramsey, why did you feel it was so important to fly from New York to a rural part of Ireland to testify in this case?
Well, you know, it's always important to fly to a rural part of Ireland. But that aside, this was a critically important case when people will risk their personal freedom and the welfare of their families for peace. If others won't stand with them, there'll be no peace. I thought it was clear, and the real lesson was not that there would be chaos or anarchy if she was acquitted, that if everyone had the conscience and courage of Mary Kelly, there would be no war. That would be a better day.
Yeah, Mary, there's another trial that's going on in Dublin now, the McKevitt trial now, where he does not have a jury. I have a feeling if you ended up in the Dublin criminal court, there would have been a different decision. But, Mary, it took courage for the jurors to come from that area who actually work at Shannon Airport or are affected by unemployment that you could have possibly caused there by having the flights redirected. And it took courage for them to say, listen, what you did, you know, wasn't against the law, because they had a case to say, listen, you cost a lot of people jobs in the Shannon area.
Mm-hmm. Well, they did show great courage, John, indeed. But I must say our defense was extremely powerful. I had a brilliant legal team. Ramsey's testimony was extremely impressive, as was Dennis Halliday's as well. And when Ramsey said in court that if everybody acted like I did, there would be no war, in his summing up speech, the judge said that Ramsey Clark was wrong and that he said there would be anarchy. Well, as I see it, that the judge was the anarchist in this case, because he interpreted the law as he saw fit, not in its true sense. And it was very interesting to hear Scott Ritter's opinion of Irish law. He said it was completely corrupt. And at the meeting I was at in Limerick last night, there was the opinion that the judge had certainly been got at and directed to, inform the jury in that way to find me guilty. So it was an extraordinary result, given that the judge was so against me.
Mary, another one of your witnesses that's well known to the WBAI audience, a particularly wake-up call, is Michael Birmingham, who flew back from Iraq to testify on your behalf. What was he testifying about?
He was testifying about the situation on the ground at the moment in Baghdad, and basically saying that the invasion had not brought any kind of peace. It had brought total chaos, and there was no law and order, and he described many of the beatings and killings that he was witnessing, and he was an extremely powerful speaker. Michael is a very shy person, but the depression and hopelessness that he conveyed to us about the situation in Iraq was devastating. So what he was testifying, really, that the invasion had brought a terrible situation to Iraq, and I think the jury were extremely moved by him. He's an ordinary man from Dublin and felt moved to go and work in Iraq, and he's returning there quite soon, I believe. I just want to say I'm in Galway at the moment, and that tomorrow there's an air show here, and there's going to be a protest because there'll be US warplanes as part of the air show, and they're billing it as a family event. This happens every year here in Galway, and at the moment the airplanes are down in Shannon. They're warplanes, F-16s. And they're going to be flying over Salt Hill area. So I'm here to join in that protest. And just to let you know, the situation in Shannon is still the same. But last night at the talk, Scott Ritter said that my court case, the ruling in my court case, had been a historical moment, and that he urged the people of Ireland to rise up and grab this moment and to act very strongly on it and realise what had happened, and to be ready to vigorously support if there's any talk of a retrial, which might occur in my case, that they must fight it very furiously. So he was a very, very inspiring speaker. I'm really honoured that all of those people came to support me. And I just hope that the people of Ireland will respond, because as Scott Ritter said, that, you know, he thinks the Irish flag should be taken down, that we just have a puppet government here who acts and who does whatever America wants, and that the people here don't seem to have a conscience. And he said this very powerful phrase. He said, the fingers of the US are firmly entrenched in the spineless back of the Taoiseach of Ireland. And I think that does reflect the situation here. And I hope people are going to take heart out of the ruling in my case and do something about it.
Ramsey, there was a reference there to the McKevitt trial. I know that you met with some of Michael McKevitt's relatives while you were over. Is there some possibility that you may become involved with that trial as well?
Well, I think it's a critically important trial. You know, it's so sad to see this family of Bobby Sands still under attack. And it's so clear that the principal thrust behind the prosecution comes from, if you can believe it, the United Kingdom and the United States. MI5 and the FBI are the people who produced this one witness who's, you know, worse than the informers we've seen here. I mean, he makes a fellow like Boyd Douglas in the Harrisburg 7 case seem like an innocent, although he was a treacherous betrayer of friends. This guy has a long history of criminal involvement and totally untrustworthy, and probably never saw McKevitt. There's no it's just incredible that for activity that's going on in Ireland, you're using these foreign investigative forces to produce a non-Irish informer who's being paid, literally has been paid, and will be paid more, millions of dollars. I think they're claiming $2 million more will go to him to hide him out after the trial. So people really need to look at it. There's no hope for freedom or for justice or truth if courts will rely on evidence like that.
You're listening to Radio Free Erin. We have us on from Galway, Mary Kelly, who is just, not convicted of attacking a U.S. warplane, and Ramsey Clark. Ramsey, you know, in this country, we've had the Plowshares movement and the Berrigan brothers that went to jail that did somewhat what Mary Kelly did. Do you think if Mary Kelly had committed that crime here, say, at a U.S. Air Force base, a jury here probably would have convicted her?
Well, our history, Sandy, has been that, and I hope Ireland's history won't be like that, that the traditional defense of justification to an act intended to save life that has of necessity an element of criminal violation, it's been taken out of our law. In the early days, we were able to keep it in there. We were able to get in the Harrisburg 7 a hung jury. And for a long time we were winning the cases, but once they took justification out, then the very testimony of the defendant was tantamount to conviction, because they're honest people, they're truthful people, and they always tell the truth about what they did. But justification works like this: if you trespass on a person's yard, and if you break in their front door, and if you run upstairs and grab their baby from a flaming bedroom and leap out the window and save it and break your leg, having kicked their dog in the meantime because it was biting you and trying to keep you from breaking into the house, and they try to prosecute you for trespassing and for breaking and entering and for destruction of private property and for kidnapping the child, you'd be laughed out of court. The prosecutor would, because your purpose was to save the child. We want a law that says you've got to stand there on the edge of the property and watch the house go up in flames and hear the baby die. And Mary was trying to save the people of Iraq. She was trying to prevent a war of aggression. She was trying to save the honor of her own country. She was protecting peace. She was acting in the self-defense of peace. And if that can't be presented to a jury, then we have absolute obedience to authority. It's a system of law that will be self-destructive.
Ramsey and Mary, we'd like to let our listeners get in on the discussion here. Is that all right with you?
Yes.
The number here is 212-209-2900 if you want to speak with Ramsey Clark or Mary Kelly. And Mary has taken phone calls from inside the cathedral in Bethlehem, and she's taken it at the peace camp outside of Shannon Airport at times, and now it's after her court case. The number here, 212-209-2900 if you want to speak to Mary Kelly, who's now out over in Galway, and Ramsey Clark here in New York. 212-209-2900. B.A.R., you're on the air.
This is Astro calling Chelsea. How you doing, Mr. Clark?
Fine. How are you, sir?
Okay, you know, the peace movement here in America there during the Vietnam War may have drove LBJ to cry because he knew he couldn't win the Vietnam War. That came out on tapes a year or two ago, taped conversations with other people there. And, of course, Ronald Reagan in Nicaragua, there, he wanted to win down there, and he wound up getting shot. That's a terrible thing, too, of course, that violence. But the idea is, the peace activists there, you can write to your congressmen, your senators, and above all, vote. Because you can vote them out of office when they don't do what you tell them to do, like benefiting people with asthma by giving them SSI, or benefiting people with disabilities who saw the World Trade Center go down to their nerves, in shackles there, and their nerves are... seeing the Vietnam War, Korea, all these wars in Iraq, they have a disability and Social Security.
Astro.
No? Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Listen, you know what? We got a full switchboard here. We want to keep moving on.
God bless.
All right. Thanks for listening, Astro, and calling in and listening to Radio Free Aaron. WBAR, you're on the air. And that is no one. B.A.R., you're on the air.
Hi, let me turn my radio off.
You're listening to Radio Free Aaron, who is speaking with Mary Kelly and Ramsey Clark.
I have a question for Ramsey Clark that's not on the topic of Ireland. Why was it easy to lock up Milosevic? And I don't really agree that he should have been locked up as a criminal. And we can't seem to do anything except call for impeachment of Bush. And why are we not able to lock him up as a war criminal, which he is?
Well, if we impeach him, he can, and he's convicted, then he can be tried for a war criminal. While he's serving as president, he has immunity from the prosecution. But I wouldn't say all we can do is impeach. It's a pretty powerful weapon that the Constitution has given to protect us from a despotic president, which we clearly have, and he's led us into a war of aggression. He's made us the principal champion of assassination, trying to assassinate people. He caused us to use weapons of mass destruction. He glorifies the brutalization of people at places like Guantanamo and setting up an execution chamber there. So if we have any respect for human rights in this country, and if we believe in the Constitution, we've got to get out and vote for impeachment. We can get our congressmen to act if we insist upon it. There's a website, www.votetoimpeach.org, and if we've got over 250,000 signers, it's just people power. If we get 1,000,000 on there, they're not going to be able to ignore us, and we can roll on and we can change the president.
All right, we have 5 more minutes here at Radio Free Aaron to take a couple of more calls at 212-209-2900. B.A.R., you're on the air.
Hi, I'm a U.S. taxpayer, and I'd like to tell Mary Kelly I forgive her for any damage she did to a U.S. plane, and not to worry about it, and forget about it. And the lunatics are running the asylum at 16 Pennsylvania Avenue in D.C.
Well, you know what, Mary? If they do try you again, you could just say, the taxpayers of America forgive you.
Yeah. Okay.
And you heard it here on WBAI. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hey, I just want to say that I think people like Mary Lawler and Mary Kelly and all the other individuals like Rachel Corey, who have worked so hard to ensure human rights throughout the world, just need an overall commendation. People like you, they give the people of our generation a hope to continue with the same action.
Listen, we thank you, and remember, thank keep you. Your phones down. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you, sir?
I'll let you know after your phone call.
I have a comment for Ramsey Clark and Mary Kelly.
Go ahead.
I'm with them 100%. My question to them is, I know during the war you want to rally behind the president, but now that the war is over, why hasn't there been condemnation in Congress and the House of Representatives of the president's policies? What about Hillary Clinton? What about Senator Schumer? What the heck is going on?
Sheep. They're just going along with what's, you know, they see high approval ratings for killing people in foreign countries, and they don't want to jeopardize that.
Let's turn around, though. I think his popularity is going to go down fast with the economy, and more importantly, with the realization that the people of Iraq don't really appreciate us for what we've done. We've killed at least 30,000 people over there. That's pretty serious offense, and they're resisting, and we're... If we can't take this country back, take the Constitution back, we're going to have a bleak future and have a lot of blood on our hands.
WBAI, you're on the air here in New York City.
Am I on the air?
Yeah, you're on.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to salute Mary Kelly and Randy Clark for all their efforts. And as a Haitian American, I realize that even though we come from two sides of the Atlantic, the small island of Haiti and this great island of Ireland, I realize that, you know, you're my sister, and you know, Irish people are my brothers and sisters, and fighting for a struggle for, you know, liberation. I just want to salute you for what you're doing. You're trying to save the souls of, you know, of this land. Even though I'm born here, I'm ashamed to call myself an American. Seeing that all the stuff that, you know, all the resources that we're wasting on killing other people just disgusts me. And I just want to salute you for what you've done. And, you know, I'm proud to, you know, call you my sister and keep on doing what you're doing. And the truth will float to the top, you know, even though they might seem to win the battle right now, but they're losing their souls. And I really am ashamed that more Americans are sheepishly following what you know, their leaders are spoon-feeding them. They don't have our interests at heart. They don't have Irish people's interests at heart. They don't have anybody's interests at heart, only to them greedy selves. And I honestly believe they don't even care about their children because they're leaving their children without a future. I mean, they might be rich now, but their children and their children's children will pay the price of their actions today.
Well,
and I
listen.
Just want to salute you as this Haitian brother over here. You know, I give you my prayers for you to continue doing what you're doing. And Ramsey Clark, keep going on. And I'm just proud, you know, I'm just proud of you and what you've done and what the Irish people have proven to that blinded judge, you know, not seeing what he's doing. Because I'm telling you, all we have to do is keep doing what they're doing and then watch them ship over themselves. Because, you know, we're waving the flag, we claim the victory, but what have we won?
All right.
Nothing.
Listen, we're going to make you the last phone call because at BAR, you don't want to chance it after a phone call like that and go off on a bad note. Mary, you're getting very popular over here. I don't know if that'll help you with getting a visa or not, but listen, we thank you. We consider you our international correspondent for Radio Free Erin. And Ramsey, thank you for coming on and flying over to the western of Ireland to be an expert witness.
Well, thank you, Sandy. And Mary, you're a great champion. We love you.
Thank you very much, Ramsey. You're a hero here, too, now. Everybody's talking about you. Thanks so much for coming.
Carry on, and I'll see you soon, I hope.
Okay. Good luck, Sandy. Bye-bye, John.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, all the callers who called in.
Yes. They've forgiven you, Mary.
Not to worry about the taxes. Okay, I'll remember that next time.
All right.
Thank you, John.
You're listening to Radio Free Erin. It's 2:55. This is my third hour here. I want to say to Al, get better. I like doing taxi shows and veteran shows, but I'd rather have you here doing your show. And to Karen, and I'll be talking to you during the week, and we'll be back next Saturday, and we'll see whose house will be raided this week. The trial of Mickey McKevitt goes on, and it's supposed to go on till at least the end of July, if not longer. And pick and choose a despot who will be mentioned next week that Mr. McKevitt was connected to, because Mr. Rupert surely will bring it up this week.
And we want to thank Liza Butler, who's also in her third hour here.